da 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 da.
You sound insane. You realize that?
Yeah.
The whole world gone crazy.
Are you serious?
Ladies and germs.
Yeah. It's showtime.
Hey, MAMFam, welcome back to the main feed here, Mad About Movies podcast. Kent and Brian co-hosting with you today as we discuss another film that comes to us via the Netflix. Brian.
Thank goodness for streaming, right? But at the same time, I thought once we
we broke the seal with Godzilla versus Kong, every week we'd be, in the theaters, and I guess maybe I could have seen this in the theaters. Was this in the theaters?
I don't think it was. I'll look it up.
It's a bit surprising,
but I don't think it was.
Yeah. Well, this honestly, we'll get into it here, but this one definitely, upon first watch, I was like, man, I wish I could have seen this in a theater with a crowd. I think this would have been a really fun family, lots of laughs in the theater kind of movie. And so that definitely stuck out to me, not watching this in a theater. And this, I guess, kind of feels like the norm now. Maybe we're past the point of have to release things online, and maybe we're at the point of just this way it's going to be. So what happened with this one was supposed to come out in 2020, of course. It was called Connected. You might have seen the trailer for it. As early as 2019, they were putting the trailer for this one out. It was called Connected. And then their plans for theatrical release were canceled. I believe it was supposed to come out around August or September of 2020. And then they canceled that.
What was the
something,
deal?
I don't know. I'm going to have to Google that after we get off the air here.
Probably political.
If you know,
right?
Email us. If you know.
Yeah. Let us know what happened in 2020.
We need those emails.
Kind of weird.
Hey, actually, it's going to be a relevant conversation to this this movie. Oddly enough, we'll get to that here in a bit. But so this movie was called Connected. Supposed to be coming out in 2020. Canceled. So they basically, I think they gave the rights back to the Lord Miller team to find a distributor. And they found Netflix, and Netflix was like, you know what? More Netflix. You don't have to have this thing called Connected, which is obviously like the most Pixar, ripoff name ever. It's like, how can we make this a one word cheeky title that all families will connect to? How about Connected? Oh, and I'm just glad, Netflix, you have that creative freedom. It's like, the working title of this was Mitchells versus the Machines. Can we roll back to that? Like, yeah, go for it. Awesome.
Here's $40 million.
And also, it's Netflix. So,
did you want more? That's fine. Yeah.
It's funny you say that. And we've been the first to talk about this a ton on the show. The quote, dump it on Netflix movies, And we talked a lot about these, 3, 4, 5 years ago, even. Where that seemed to be a strategy where it's like, if this movie's not good, that's when you give it to Netflix. But we're past that point now. And now Netflix is taking the Amazon Prime approach. It's like, hey, let's go to Sundance. Let's see what movies are out there. Let's buy some good movies instead of spending our own money on bad movies or getting the scrap heap from the big studios. And this is a movie that struck me like anybody could have bought this. I mean, they could have sold this to anyone, I guess I should say. This is a very wide appeal, and I'm sure it screened very well in the past year on the when they were shopping it around. And you're right. I'm not sure how much money they made on this via Netflix, Brian. Maybe you know that, but easy buy if I was Netflix.
It strikes me as a little odd that, I mean, I know, obviously, I understand 2020 was weird and nobody knew what to do and it's unprecedented and all this sort of stuff. I totally understand that. But, I mean, this is a really good movie and it was done and it's beautiful. It's beautifully made. It's very odd to me that the studio would just say, we'll pass. We're not. We got too many things that are now stacked up, so we'll let this one go. Surely there was something else in your slate that you could have said, that's the one we're selling to Apple Plus or whatever. This is an odd one to, I mean, I guess maybe you just want to stay in good graces with Lord Miller, but still, it's a strange choice for me, because this is a really, I'll be honest, when I knew all that sort of stuff, and then I hadn't seen a trailer for this, and when I saw that it was headed to Netflix, we have, it has, our mindset has changed in terms of the whole dumped on Netflix thing, like you said, Kent. But there was still a part of me that was like, Mitchell's versus the Machines, and it got, you know, knowing all this stuff, I was like, this has got to stink, right? This has got to not be good. And then the trailer was very, very good, and then the movie was excellent as well. So it's just, it's an odd one for me to cut loose the way they did.
Yeah, it doesn't, I don't know, maybe they were scared about relevancy, because there's so much in this movie that's kind of, I don't know, talking about stuff right now in terms of technology and topics and things like that. Maybe they're just like, hey, if we hold on to this for 2 years and put it out, it might not be funny anymore, honestly. You know, so maybe that there was an urgency to get it out there, and they're like, hey, we just don't have the money to put it out. I don't know the story. I'm sure there's a big long one that somebody will tweet at us at Mad About Movies. If you find it, let us know. I love that that industry type stuff. So speaking of that, this one does come to us via the production team of Lord and Miller, but is not directed by them. It's Mike Rionda, who you might know from his work on Gravity Falls via the Cartoon Network.
Yeah.
And
I do like Gravity Falls. That's one that Coop, he's not super sold on. It's not like his favorite show or anything, but when that's in the rotation, I'm always like, this looks pretty cool, man. I like this one. Good graphic novels as well.
He also wrote it with Jeff Rowe, who also co-directed it with them. And then you've got the Lord Miller animation factory, really.
Yeah.
At work here. Right. And their kind of sensibilities just plastered all over this thing. And, you know, I don't know if their reputation has fallen off a bit in terms of like what it was when Lego Movie and 21 Jump Street, like, were back to back kind of thing. And it was like, these guys, oh my God. But we get news today, actually, Brian, as I'm getting on to record this episode with you guys, that the Lord and Miller duo have signed on to direct a movie based on a book called The Premonition, A Pandemic Story. So this is a
Michael
book
Lewis.
That was, that was released last week about the beginning of COVID, and I guess the first responders and their kind of, I don't know what the word I'm looking for is, their, I don't know, their urgency or their attempt to, I don't know, tell those around them how serious it was and before it got out of hand, that kind of thing. All that to say, and I told you it was going to come back around to COVID, right? All that to say, you know, these guys, you know, started off in animation, obviously. They're bringing back Clone High, I believe, actually, their first show that was on MTV. I think they're rebooting that for, you know, Amazon or Hulu or something like that. So that could be fun. But, you know, obviously they came on with Clyde with the Chance of Meatballs and then Lego Movie. And then you had their production elements on 21 Jump Street and Last Man on Earth and some other awesome stuff that, Brigsby Bear, for example, you know, produced that, which was excellent. Have you seen that yet?
No, I haven't.
With
I haven't
Kyle Mooney. That's one worth seeking.
Oh, I'm sorry. I have. Yes. I forgot that title. Yes. That was a weird one I dug quite a bit. Mark Hamill, baby.
Yes.
Nice little
that was a
strange role for him. I love
Kyle Mooney, baby. Solid movie. We might get to him later as well. This is the episode of teases, I guess. But but yeah, man. So all that to say, it looks like they're, you know, pushing the animation side. You know, they're going to produce stuff. And at the same time, like, let's become serious directors and let's like get into some dramas and flex our chops. Obviously, they're probably most well known for the listener as the duo that was fired from Solo, the Star Wars story. But but I think when you see a movie like this and when you look at their filmography and all that, I mean, they just have their own distinct voice. They're auteurs in their own way. You know, everything they have, you kind of, you don't even have to look it up. It's like, this is a Lord and Miller production, you know, you just know. I mean, Spider-Verse, you know, obviously too. And so they have a unique voice, which isn't great for Star Wars movies. And they probably be the first to admit that, you know, mutually part ways. And this is no different, man. You know, I was scared that they wouldn't be able to repeat the success or the voice of, you know, those Lego movies and some of the early success that they had in comedy, because it's tough to maintain. But oh my God, Brian, this movie, I swear I smiled for 2 hours. I rotated between smiling and crying for 2 hours. It was so good. And honestly, perfect. I honestly can't think of much that I really disliked about this this movie. And you know, it's right up there, man, with Pixar. And you know, this is proof that before I pass the soapbox to you, this is proof that like Pixar is great, but there's still great other stuff you can do with animation. That's like, we think of them as the pinnacle and the be all end all of animation. It's like, no, we can do more different, have a different voice, could be a little more edgy and do a lot crazy and still push the boundaries of what animation is known for, like Pixar does, but still kind of not be as toned down really as Pixar has to be. And that this is a movie like that. And I absolutely loved it, man.
Yeah, this was one that, like I said, wasn't really on my radar until a couple weeks ago, and I had people asking me about it, which it happens relatively frequently. I mean, you know, when people find out you have a movie podcast, they want to talk to you about it, and you don't really want to talk about having your podcast. We've said many times, Richard is very famous for saying, I hope everybody in the world listens to my podcast except for the people that I actually know in real life. And that, I think that's pretty accurate. But when people know that, you know, they do that pretty frequently. Somebody will say, hey, have you seen whatever? Have you seen this movie? Is any good? And I have to kind of like think of, I don't know if you do this, Kent, maybe this is just me, but I try to think of like, okay, what do I know about this person? What movies do they like? Would I recommend this movie? How can you tailor
what you actually think to what they will think and not hate you for?
Exactly. Yeah, I got you. What kind of disclaimers do I need to put on this? You know, that kind of thing. And but this was one that I knew about, but I had multiple people in my life that were like, hey, we watched Mitchell's versus the Machine with my kids last night, and it is awesome. You've got to check this out. Rather than, hey, what should I watch this or not? That kind of thing. So. So I was primed for it, and we had a, I guess last week, it may have been last Monday. I think it was, cause we recorded right afterwards, but we usually have soccer practice on Monday nights, my Monday is like my busiest day of the week, and I'm running around crazy, but it was raining, we canceled practice. And so we had like a random weeknight where we weren't doing anything and we just got to sit around. So we did. We sat and we watched the movie, and Coop just loved it. He was cackling. I mean, it was right up his alley, but you're right. It also has those sort of Pixar sensibilities. It's very smart. The humor is just whip smart. I appreciate the writing on this so much, because it is so good. But yeah, it's super emotional too. And I think a less heavy way than a lot of Pixar movies are, but in the same vein of like, this is very real and true and authentic, and that's why it's emotional, not because we're playing up the music and it's, you know, we know how to emotionally manipulate you and stuff. I mean, any movie,
a very real way. I mean, it's just all their films. Yeah. I mean, you look at Lego Movie, you look at Spider-Verse, you look at even 21 Jump Street and some of the more emotional, like, friendship aspects of that, you know, they do that really well, and they seem to know
they really do
that. They're that these films have to have that and to work and to kind of, I don't know. It seems like they really have the formula down when it comes to how they structure out films
absolutely.
And they're emotional, almost like a science, like Pixar does. And, that goes across all their movies. And it's just their storytelling ability. And Mike Rionda and Jeff Rowe deserve a lot of credit for their voice on this, and being able to capture that energy in animation and all that is extremely tough, man. And I have a lot of respect, like you said, for anyone who can make animation more than just stuff to look at, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I reflect on Raya and the Last Dragon that we had talked about a couple of weeks ago, And I talked about that and how forgettable it was. And I've already forgotten it. I don't know, it was a month ago, how forgettable it was in the moment. But, you know, just the story elements. But what I do remember about it is how great it looked, you know. But a film like this, I'll remember how great it looked, but I'll also remember the story elements. And you have to put both of those just as equal in importance for some of these movies to sing and not just be an average, you know, Smallfoot 2 or whatever that comes out every year, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I mean, the blueprint is there. It's, you know, you mentioned Pixar and they've sort of, it may not be an actual stranglehold, but culturally it kind of feels like a stranglehold on animation and over for, you know, 20 plus years now. It's sort of felt that way.
But they would like to kind of put themselves into a corner, though, with that. Do you know what I mean by that earlier?
Yeah, it's like that's true. They're still knocking out great ones. I mean,
well, not that the movies aren't great. You know? I mean, the movies are great, but like story wise, they have people expect a certain thing when you see a Pixar movie, and if you don't, if it doesn't fall into that,
and people get grouchy when it doesn't. You know, if Pixar does a movie that's not just wrecking you emotionally, then people are like, what the heck, man? This is just a thing about a dinosaur or a car or whatever. And you're like, yeah, right. Sometimes we do that too. But
there's an expectation there with everything. And it just a film like this, I don't know. It feels like it had no boundaries of what it could do and what it wanted to do. And it's like, dude, we're going to bring in YouTube clips and we're going to have comic elements and 2D and hand-drawn, like, notebook paper style stuff. And it just, I don't know. It just seemed like they took advantage of like their stance and the independent animation community and just kind of made a fun movie and didn't try to conform to anything.
Yeah, for sure.
Which was refreshing.
I was going to say. It's, I think that I would rather than looking at Pixar kind of as a Disney Pixar kind of combining, because how often do you have a conversation with somebody who, this is not a criticism of these people at all, but conflates whatever Disney animation is with Pixar animation.
It they tried to, that's what they did when they bought Pixar to, is like, the, let's just Pixar, Pixar, right. Pixar-ify. That's a weird word. Probably never been said. Pixar-ify the Disney animation stuff. And that's what they did with Wreck-It Ralph and Frozen.
Sure.
But they still feel like they understood what sets Disney apart from Pixar.
Yeah.
Too.
But the audience may not at times. I mean, how many people I've talked to over the years that have said, oh, Moana, I just love Pixar. I'm like, well, it's not Pixar. That's in some ways it's semantics, but I would like to see it more, say, look at it more as Pixar is almost like kind of like the Sopranos in that it's laid this incredible groundwork for animation to be taken or be looked at in a different light. And I think I'm by no means an expert on animated movies, especially once you get outside of the Pixar, Sony, Disney group. And you know, when you get into, especially the movies coming from overseas studios and whatnot, that's way far outside my real knowledge base. But it feels like at the moment we're kind of in a, similar to the way that we were with TV, that like, man, this is like golden age of peak TV. It feels like we are in a golden age of animation. Like there are so many good animated movies coming out every year from different studios and different production companies. And they are, I think a lot of them anyway, not, I won't say all, but a lot of them are taking what Pixar has laid out since Toy Story and running with it and doing their own thing just like this. It's not like this is in no way a knockoff of a Pixar movie, but it certainly has some Pixar sentiments in it, right? And I think that's, in some ways, that's more valuable because you're able, kind of like what you're saying, you can do things that are a little bit outside the box that maybe Pixar can't do at this point, and yet also really bring home this authentic, true to life feeling that you get from this.
You just have a feeling somebody in the brain trust at Pixar would walk into the storyboarding and be like, hey guys, let's tone it down a little bit. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I like it, but it's too much. Okay. And you know, and that I'm just glad that nobody did that for this. And like, you know what, let's do something special. And it really felt like that from the animation style. Speaking of that, let's get into this bad boy. I got a few notes I want to get through before we hit a weekly recommend here at the end, Brian. Man, the comic style of this really stuck out to me as like doing it right, but not doing too much, you know, kind of in a Scott Pilgrim-y kind of way, you know, where it would add a few elements here and there to enhance the look and feel of the regular CG characters. And I thought that was done tastefully, not too much, you know. The main character, Katie, I loved her making her own movies and wanting to be a filmmaker. And that whole YouTube journey that it seems like a lot of kids are on these days. In fact, I don't know. I think it was my older sister, who's a teacher, was telling me that, you know, they do polls with kids. And like it was like 70% of kids now, when they grow up, they want to be YouTubers or something, or social media stars. And like that's how their career path they want to go on. Yeah. That totally makes sense. I mean, if I was that age, I'd be like, yeah, that's probably the path for me. You know, I was the same way, making videos and doing goofy stuff with my friends and filming my dog and all that kind of stuff at that age. So makes sense. And it was cool how they worked that into the main story, or the main character of the story, Katie. Mm-hmm. And I thought the family was hilarious. You know, you got Danny McBride and Maya Rudolph as the parents.
Right.
My God, Rick Mitchell. Who's, it's funny, he's a great weatherman here in Dallas, Rick Mitchell. Shout out. Very handsome, great weatherman.
Where do you stand on weathermen? Are you a weather guy? I don't know where you're.
I'm Team Finfrock, who's Rick Mitchell's superior at NBC here in Dallas. Yeah. So he's my go-to. But not really, I'll just go to the Weather Channel, you know? I went through like during election coverage and stuff, the wife and I, we were like 10 o'clock news mainstays for a lot during the COVID stuff and all that, you know, just to make sure we were up to speed on local law and stuff like that. And it made me miss. Yeah. The local news is a lost art for sure.
I hate weathermen. I hate all of it. It makes me.
Speaking of, it's like a hurricane outside right now. So if I get knocked off the air here, that's why I feel my voice suddenly drops out.
At 4 o'clock this afternoon, the weather was like, no, it's going to be fine until like 8, 9 o'clock. So I went ahead with soccer games tonight and it just poured on us, and I had to cancel games in the middle of games. I was like, how do we not know? 2 hours out, how do we not know that it's going to be like a huge
They still don't know. It makes me crazy. All the technology.
I hate weather.
Still,
I hate
it. Still.
Yeah.
Shout out to Rick Mitchell. I thought Danny McBride, the voice work he did was really fun. And just that character was like a combo of so many dad characters that we've seen over the years. The Homer Simpson, I don't know, Peter Griffin, Dick Van Dyke, just clumsy dad,
the man child,
but the technologically challenged dad is a funny a funny aspect to bring to the table. The guy that can't understand computers in a world that literally runs on an Alexa ripoff, I guess, in this universe. But pal, I love we're not subtle about that at all with the clear Amazon logo ripoff with the smile face. I wonder how they got away with that. It's like, can we do this? It's satire. Go for it.
Yeah. It's just different.
Now. That's the stuff Pixar would never do. I guess they kind of did that with WALL-E, and they didn't make it that obvious. Right. So that was fun. And you know, that family, I don't know, Brian, your kid's not this old yet, but it's something I would definitely be doing if I had kids that were, you know, in their teens, early teens, is the no phones at the dinner table thing. Yeah. And that was a very fun scene in the movie.
For sure. Yeah. No, Rick Mitchell rules. I mean, my son is only 8, but I feel it. I feel it coming. All these things, you know. I'll say that to him. Like, there's going to come a time where, because he and I are super tight. I'm not good at very many things, but I'm a really good dad. We spend a ton of time together. We have been best buddies from day one, but I say to him all the time, like, there's going to come a time not too far down the road now at this point where you are not going to like me, you know, like we are not going to get along, because that's just the way that it goes. And then you hope that by the time they turn whatever age that they do like you again, you know, you hope you don't drive them off or whatever. But yeah, I felt Rick Mitchell's emotions big time. I mean, you can see this is a guy who's just trying his best, and sometimes your best is not good enough with teenagers and stuff.
The scene that really stuck out to me there, Brian, was when they're on the hike, I guess, and he's like, "All right, guys, let's go hit this peak and check out the scenery." And it's Katie and her little brother are watching a video on their phone. And they're like, "We're good, Dad."
Yeah.
And that's it. Yeah. And he's just like walks away, you know, like disappointed. It's like, that is so something that probably happens daily to most families, you know. Dad wants to do something that's, you know, family activity or something outdoors or, you know, bring people together. And it's, "We're good, Dad. We've got social media. We got TikTok, bro. Get a life. Right. Get a life, bro."
Yeah. How could you possibly like entertain us like TikTok the lame one. Is?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Oh, how could you, sure. how, I understand it, man. How could you replicate the satisfaction of NBA Twitter, right? So,
right.
Or,
right.
or Tim Tebow retiring or unretiring. Or let's just make the podcast about that, Brian. I haven't had enough of that. Oh,
man, I got some hot takes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, that really was such a funny character, and then he breaks her laptop, breaks Katie's laptop accidentally, right? "You destroyed my dreams, Dad. My dream to be a filmmaker." And he's like, "All right, how am I gonna make this up to you?" And so he Clark Griswolds the thing and's like, "Let's drive across the country to bring the family together."
The worst thing possible.
Yeah. Yeah. And then her face as he's driving away, like her face staring out the window was so good.
Right.
So funny.
Yes.
I love that. That pure absolute purity, I guess, really is what I'm saying of Rick's intentions there of like, he's the best trying to intentions. Be a good dad, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think that's sort of one of the evolutions of dad in TV and movies is we've gone from the sort of traditional dads aren't great. They're just sort of there. Maybe they come through in a moment or two, but that's kind of all it is. And all this sort of thing. I'm surrounded by most of my friends who are dads are really good dads. And most of our dads are really good dads. And so some of those sort of generic, the Al Bundy types have sort of died off. That's not you still get it every once in a while, but that's not in vogue in pop culture anymore. And now you're getting more of the dad who's trying his best, but just can't keep up, which is a lot more of dads than you might think. But yeah,
there's an endearing quality now that you didn't
absolutely
usually get with the Homer Simpsons.
He is absolutely
he's not
trying
choking
his
kids out in this.
Right. Right. You know that he loves his kids. You know that he's really is trying his best. He just can't understand. And also they can't understand him.
Yeah.
Can't get through. And it's just a hard thing.
There's a disconnect.
Right. It's that age group is the worst. I see it all the time with parents and kids that it's like, y'all are going to be fine in 5 years, but this next 5 years is going to suck because kids that are hormonal and trying to figure out who they are and stuff are terrible brats most of the time, even the good ones, you know? And then you have the parents that are, they're aging and they're just trying to hang on to what they can with their kids. So anyway, sorry, I'm on my soapbox. But yes, I thought this was incredibly true to life.
And really accurate.
Yeah. The way that they portrayed Rick and Katie and both of them and their relationship and stuff. And the mom and the brother too, also, I mean, again, very, the brother especially is just kind of there for comedic relief for the most part. And that's totally fine. And then Maya Rudolph, the mom, Linda, I think is, a little bit more of a storytelling. It's not MacGuffin. She's a central character, but like, she's kind of there to move things along between the dad
until the end. We'll get to that, but yeah.
Until the end. For sure. So, but yeah, those two characters in particular.
Yeah, she's a very typical kind of trying to be hip mom character that's not really hip. Mom jeans kind of thing going on, you know.
Right.
Very accurate for Maya Rudolph to be playing the mom jeans character, right? After her mom jeans sketch, which is incredible. So yeah, we go to the brother Aaron, who was hilarious, by the way. Oh my gosh.
Great.
One of the better side characters in animation in recent memory. This family had a lot of similar qualities as the Parr family from The Incredibles.
Sure.
To me.
Yeah, that's a good comparison. Yeah.
A little less Pixar-fied. I did it. I said it.
Mm-hmm.
But man, I want to touch on some of these side characters. To me, the voice cast of this, oh my gosh, like, how do they think to get some of these people, right? Mm-hmm. You got Olivia Colman to do Pal or Alexa, which was awesome. Couldn't probably get a better casting choice right now than Olivia Colman's English accent for that, right? And you got
Need to open a European Treasures wing of the American Treasure.
Yeah,
she'll
be
just for
first ballot,
Olivia Colman,
right? First
and
ballot.
Hugh Grant. Yeah, yes. And Patrick Stewart.
Exactly. Eric Andre plays like the Mark Zuckerberg, Jeff Bezos character here.
Sure. He's got a little Zuck.
Kind of got a little Zuck. Yeah. Maybe that's why I said that. He's got a little Facebook, little Facebook quality going on with some of these keynotes and the, maybe the need to take over your life like Facebook does a little bit, not subtle about that at all. But some of the side characters that stuck out to me. Oh my gosh, Brian, Beck Bennett as the Eric/Pal Max robots. I died laughing. I'm not kidding. Some of the, what was it? I wrote some of his lines down here. The, let's see here. Yum, yum, good. All that kind of stuff he was doing, you know, was incredible. How does this guy not get more voice work? You know, now I guess he will now probably after this, but
he's great.
But he's my favorite SNL person right now besides Kyle Mooney. Yeah, and that's Mooney. Why it's coming back to Kyle Mooney. Told you.
He narrated an audiobook. I got to look up the details of it. I'm pretty sure it's called Screwball. This is like from 3 or 4 years ago. I'm looking it up now. Because it was a Simon Rich book. Mm-hmm. It's only 40 minutes long, so it's really just a dumb audio play. It's, y'all got to check this out. This is like a side recommend for the end. It's on, if you're an Audible subscriber, it's free. You can get it. Beck Bennett plays a Major League Baseball player in like 1915 or something, 1914. And it's like sort of a take on Babe Ruth, but like if Babe Ruth was is a complete idiot. And it is one of the fun, like Simon Rich.
That's an interesting
comedic genius. But Beck Bennett,
we'll get there later, actually, Brian, too, because my recommend has to do with Babe Ruth, oddly. So
nice. Yeah, we'll talk about check anybody who's a subscriber needs to check that out because it. I mean, it's free. And it's 40 minutes long, and I like cackled at my desk when I was reading. It is such a funny bit. Beck Bennett is a perfect reader for that thing. So sorry, little tangent again.
Yeah, man. He was like, I don't know. Aside from the Mitchell family, he was like the MVP of this movie. What he brought to the table and just. The drawing the emotions on the faces of the thing. I mean, it was just so good. I was just smiling and cackling for 40 minutes straight there during that whole thing. I'm not kidding you. And then when Fred Armisen comes into the picture as Deborah Bot or whatever it is.
Right.
And you've got Conan O'Brien as Glaxon 5000 doing some voice work and Blake Griffin pops in there. John Legend does some voice work. Gosh, this cast is Chrissy Teigen as well, or Teigen.
Right. Teigen.
She, I think it's Teigen, but she said it's too late to change it.
Oh, okay. My bad. Sorry, Chrissy.
It's not your bad. It's everyone's bad because we all call her Chrissy Teigen. She's like, all right, it's just Teigen. You had to bring both of them in here. If you're getting John Legend, you gotta bring Chrissy.
You get them both.
Love her. And Charlene Yee, Love when she pops in to do great, voice work
great
as
voice
well.
Cast. All around.
Yeah. Great all around MVP voice cast. Mm-hmm. And they use them like, I don't know. It's not like one of those DreamWorks movies where they're just throwing names at the
exactly
screen trying to get
say.
People in there. Mm-hmm. I didn't even know Conan was in this until I'm watching it. Like, that's definitely Conan, and this is incredible, you know? So,
right. It's not a Danny McBride movie, you know? It's not a Maya Rudolph movie. It's this is the cast of this movie that, I'm totally with you. DreamWorks.
Yeah, you don't even see their names on the poster or anything.
Worst about
you know?
That. So, yeah. It's just like, we got Will Smith. I'm like, well, okay, that's fine, but like, this is now just a Will Smith movie.
Okay, because they got Willem Dafoe to do a starfish. Okay, great. That's gonna bring in like 8 people, maybe.
Yeah, yeah.
Good
kids
job.
Aren't even allowed to
they
see
spent
Will
8 million on that too. So, that's worth it. Yeah. All right. A couple other things. The Dino truck stop, Brian, killed me because we live oddly next to Glenrose, Texas, which is like a dinosaur mainstay because
area,
they discovered some fossilized dinosaurs and footprints and stuff. So they, of course, they like milked that. You know, of course,
Dino World,
Dino
baby.
Valley State Park and Dino everything down there. And so I just laughed at like the big apocalyptic scene happening in like a dinosaur park that the dinosaurs look nothing like regular dinosaurs, like in the Pee Wee's Big Adventure scene, you know, where they're at the dinosaur park. It's just like that. And the dinosaurs are just terrible. And the kids like, the little kid's like, these look nothing like dinosaurs. And she's just horrified at the fake dinosaurs more than like a real one.
Yeah. I don't know if the roadside attraction is really a thing anymore, but man, it was when we were growing up. That was a big deal on a road trip to go camping or whatever, you know, because we couldn't afford, you know, Disney World or something. Go camping instead, and or going to grandma's or whatever it is, man. Oh, look at this cool. Oh, this place got a big ball of twine. Like, oh, well, we probably should check that out. Let's get 10 minutes out of the car and stuff. But yeah, the dinosaur thing was pretty spot on for that's a big dad move. We'll check this out. Sure, we'll see what's up with this thing. And you're like, this never works out, Dad. This is never as good as you think it's going to be.
Yes, absolutely. Another big climactic scene takes place at a rundown mall, which seems kind of a thing now in movies is mall nostalgia. So we get more of that here. I laughed at the See's Candies store though, because that's a very. Very specific joke. it was good. I left. And then the attack of the Furbies and Furby nostalgia.
That was great,
obviously
man.
Big too, but that was a hilarious scene. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. The Furby stuff was really funny. It was very, very well done with the giant Furby, the display Furby or whatever. Coop was like, why did they make one so big? I was like, well, pretty sure it's a display, but yeah, that was really funny. That was very well structured. It was a fun bit.
Good reveal.
I like the whole the use of technology on this was really I mean they had a lot of fun with it and it also kind of felt like not too far off, right? Like it was like yeah. Like even when he's doing the presentation and he says the whole, you know, I know what you're thinking. What happens if they turn evil? Well, we've got a fix for that and stuff. Mm-hmm. But I thought a little. I mean, I don't know if "meta" is the right term in this case, but it sort of played
too on
the
nose.
Expectation really well. I liked it. I thought it was a really well done bit with all that. But I thought they did the technology side of this very well.
It's kind of a Black Mirror kind of thing. This is what could happen if we don't.
Sure,
we're not
sure.
Careful,
Black Mirror
guys.
For kids. Yeah,
right.
Yeah, for real.
Well, I show my kids Black Mirror. I don't know about you. Every kid,
just
I cover.
The kids from your apartment complex. Right. You're always like, come over and watch Black Mirror.
Weekly
kids.
Screenings at the Garrison household. You seen the Metalhead episode, kids? Wait until you see this.
How y'all feel about Jesse Plemons?
Good stuff, man. What a show Black Mirror was for a stretch there. A couple other notes I want to hit on, and then we'll touch on our recommends. The blind rage thing was funny from the pal. Like cell phone when Olivia Colman's character was like in a blind rage and it was just the phone vibrating on the ground, you know. It's a great visual. I love when we can pull back from like and show like what this would really look like in reality. You know, Toy Story does that a lot too, you know, kind of the pullback shot. They did that well here. And then, I don't know if it was a reference here, but Rick Mitchell went to Baylor. Apparently I tried to look it up. Lord and Miller or Dartmouth boys. So it wasn't them. It's not a reference to them. My grandpa would be turning in his urn if he knew I was out here with a Dartmouth boy. Andy Bernard, Cornell 95. season 4 of The Office talk, by the way, coming up in the VIP. Man, tease for that. Little Nard Dog. So they went to Dartmouth, and I looked up Mike Rionda, and I couldn't find his college, but so I guess it's a reference to one of them. But I was like, that's a very specific Baylor Bears t-shirt that he's wearing in one of the photos in this. So, And then the one other thing I loved was, I touched on it earlier, Linda Mitchell's rise up at the end, where it's like, you never cross a mother scorned, you know, scene. It was great. I love that. She just like goes full ninja mode at the end of the movie out of nowhere. I like that.
And that the robots are all just terrified of her is very fun. There's like a... When she pops up for the second time and they're like, oh no, she found us. That was the one that got me. I was dying at that. That was a funny bit. Yeah. Don't mess with the mama bear, you know?
No.
Don't
get in the way with that. Exactly. And then the way it all comes, obviously it all comes together in the end, right? You know, and all happy ending and tears flow and all that. And they did that very well. Gosh. And I would see a sequel to this, honestly. This would be a fun one to revisit the Mitchell family in some way. The Mitchells versus something else, the zombie apocalypse or something. Right. Would be fun.
Yeah, no, that would be a blast. Yeah, I love that. I love that. I think maybe one of my favorite things about this is it's clearly trying to make some points about technology and the way that technology is running our lives and stuff, but it's not judgmental. Like, it's not... the solution at the end of the movie is not that Katie gets off her phone and spends more time with her dad. It's that her dad learns to appreciate the thing that she loves and the way that she's trying to communicate, and that they sort of
subscribes to her YouTube and
Yeah. I mean that he understands her worldview better, and she, I think, understands his worldview better, rather than, you know, if you spend less, what I learned, kids, is that it's best to not to spend so much time on your phone. You know, it kind of towed that line and gave a little bit both ways. And I think that's probably the more appropriate. I don't know. I see a lot of people that kind of want to, and I get this way too at times, because it's just, it's so overwhelming in places, but I see a lot of people who are just kind of anti-technology, or just like, man, I wish we could just go back to no internet and stuff like that. And instead it's like, you know, this can be a pretty powerful tool. This can be a pretty significant thing that we can, you know, that we can use for good. It's just a matter of, like everything, it's balance and figuring out how things work for you and the people you love and all that sort of stuff. So I really dug that. I thought that message
good came message
through pretty loud and clear. And
compromise, I was
appreciative
right
of that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That was excellent, man. This was, like I teased at the outset, just to come back around and hit grades here. This is perfect, man. This was my number one of the year right now, and a front runner for best animated movie for sure. Be hard to top this one.
Yeah, this is a good movie, dude.
This was, I mean, for animated movie of the year. It'll be hard to top this one. I don't know. Space Jam won't qualify. You know, there's not a lot of, I don't know if there's a lot of Disney movie this year. Sure. Is there? Luca coming this year with Pixar?
Luca, Pixar is next month. And there's something Disney Pixar at the end of the year. I can't remember. I liked Raya a lot. I'm still very high on that one. It wasn't, I wasn't very forgettable for me. So that's up there as well. But this is, at the moment, I would say this tops it. We'll see how I feel later in the year. But boy, I mean,
rewatchable.
The stuff with the moose and like the whole concept of the dad, like kind of setting aside some of his dreams and goals and whatnot, because now his most important thing is, you know, all this sort of stuff. I was, yeah, it was a, it was a sob fest in my house.
Yeah, man, that montage of the home movies was so good. Oh, like the 20-minute mark of the movie.
Straight to the heart.
Right. Yeah, right to the gut, early. You know, they could have saved that for the end. Yeah. And
yeah,
he stumbles across the montage or whatever, you know, kind of moment. Right. But like they throw that right at you at a Toy Story 2 Jessie the cowgirl. Like, all right, the tears are flowing early with this one. And it's good. I loved it. Yeah,
The sequence where she... Yeah, totally. A plus for me as well. The sequence where she's looking through the home movies and sees the one of the dad of Rick saying goodbye to the house and taking the moose off the thing.
Yes.
I mean, that's like some Inside Out stuff right there. Like that was a cut deep kind of a Pixar hurt.
So you said you know, this one did stick out to me, Brian, as one that was like for the adults, honestly. But your kid loved it.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I mean, he's probably watched it
the
five
pug,
times.
Doug, the pug, by the way. Yeah. Makes it
dog pig. He's been walking around dog pig loaf of bread, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, this is I mean, he loves slapstick humor and there's a lot of that in this. The way that it integrates like that, the meme of the gibbon or whatever, and the real life clips that are in this.
The things that I laughed so hard at was when she's like,
a ton of great stuff.
It was when Linda's like yelling at Rick about never posing in a photo, and he's like, "What about that one?" And it's like the default photo from Walmart or whatever that comes in the frame. I laughed so hard at that cutaway. I don't know. Those types of jokes are so easy, but like,
yes,
seemed like they had two or three of them max in this movie. You know, it's like, okay, we can have a couple of these moments, but we don't want to overdo it in a Family Guy way where it's just all cutaway jokes, you know?
Right.
So,
yeah, no, I think that's where this is to me at least, it's most Pixarian is that the jokes are for 85% of the jokes are for kids, but the story is for adults. And, that's the genius of like a Toy Story or Inside Out or whatever,
Soul.
Any of those movies is this will make the kids laugh and they maybe won't notice that their parents are crying because it's so emotional.
Cause it's it's what relevant parents feel. And yeah, they'll understand someday. Yeah. They'll understand. They'll go back.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, yeah, A+ for me, man. This was sets the bar very high for 2021 animation and 2021 movies. To be honest, this will like I said, number one of the year overall so far. So I'm gonna knock it 10 spots down as we go here, which is it's doable. It happens. But we're now in May and we've got an easy top tenner in the fold. I really liked Nobody with our boy Bob Odenkirk, but this one topped it.
Yeah, right now that's my top three is this, Nobody, and Raya, The Last Dragon, I would guess.
Nice.
Yeah, for sure. Nothing else is even
all right, well, follow Brian and I on Letterboxd, by the way, as we go through the year. I'm at Kent Garrison. He's at Brian Gill, I believe, on there. And we got lists, past lists, current lists going on there. It's a good way to track the movies that you watch if you check out Letterboxd. All right, Brian, let's hit a quick weekly recommend.
Weekly recommends.
All right, man. Want to start it off?
Sure. I recommend a book with a slight disclaimer. I'm not done with this yet. I don't like to typically recommend books before I've finished it, but I am enjoying it and it's brand new, so I'm going to go ahead and get it out there. It's called Project Hail Mary by Andy Weir. Andy Weir is the guy who wrote The Martian, which is just a fantastic, great movie. We did an episode on it back in 2015. Fantastic book as well. So this is, it's not his follow-up. He had a book a couple years ago called Artemis that was okay. I was like an enjoyable sort of throwaway science fiction kind of movie, or excuse me, book. This one is closer to The Martian at this point. It's funny, but it's very smart. Andy Weir, I think, does a fantastic, really true, because I'm not that smart, especially scientifically and mathematically. He does a really, really good job of putting what I believe is real science, but if it's not, it's very well disguised real science into his books in a way that feels mostly accessible, and if nothing else, then not overwhelming. I've read a lot of science fiction over the years, some like sort of high-minded science fiction and some sort of super light dime store type science fiction, and a lot of times when when an author goes really deep into the actual science of something, it gets lost in translation, or it's over my head, maybe. Maybe that's the best way to put it. I think Andy Weir does a very, very good job of making those...
Poop potatoes.
Yeah, exactly. But he does a really good job of simplifying those things and making them... They're still central to the book, and they're not dumbed down. He doesn't speak down to his audience, but he does make it to where it's so wrapped up in an entertaining, engrossing narrative that you're able to stick with it, and he does a good job of explaining it. I would imagine he has some sort of background in teaching, or if he doesn't, maybe he should, because he's very good at this. Anyway, I'm kind of lost in the weeds, but yeah, it's a science fiction book about a guy who wakes up. It's got a lot of tropes in it, but I think he presents them in really interesting and somewhat unique ways. But yeah, there's a guy who wakes up from a coma and discovers that he is on a spaceship, and then is trying to recall why he's on a spaceship, what his mission is, what the events that led him to this are, and all this sort of stuff. And it's read by, I'm doing the audiobook. It's read by a guy named Ray Porter, who's a very good reader. So yeah, I'm about halfway through it, Project Hail Mary, and I'm really digging it. So hopefully the back half of the book holds up as compared to the front half.
There you go. When you said Project Hail Mary, I was like, oh man, nice Stahlbach biography reading. Nice. Well, you'll love this, Brian. Guess who's directing the movie? Lord and Miller.
I can't remember. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Nice.
They're directing the movie. Drew Goddard.
They have a great.
Drew Goddard
great
is doing the screenplay.
Okay.
I
remember.
And guess who's starring as the
thing,
main character? Who would you want it to be?
Is it Gosling?
Who would you want it to be?
Obviously. Gosling or Michael B. Jordan. That's number one and two on every list.
Oh, it's Gosling. So you're good.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. I remember this. Yeah. I remember the rights to this book got sold 6-8 months ago. So, and it just came out last week. So it was sold well in advance. Yeah. Now I remember. Yeah. Right. I can't.
So continuing the trend of Lord Miller directing actual movies. Right. This is yet another, in addition to The Premonition, to look out for. Sweet. In development. And should be awesome based on your recommend of the book. It'll be great.
Yeah, can't wait. Gosling will be great in this.
Sweet.
Good role. But he's great in everything. He's the Gosling.
That's true. That's true. Well, good recommend. I'll have to check that one out before the movie for sure. My recommend, teased earlier, is in the baseball realm. Brian, I went to the Ranger game this past weekend with my with my father-in-law. And it was the first time for me to go to the new Rangers stadium, and I got a lot of takes there. Maybe we'll get into that in the VIP here.
Okay.
Shortly.
Yeah, let's do it. I do too. I went last week as well.
Okay.
Come
tease
to the
that
VIP
for our
What About Bob. We'll
What About Bob VIP. We'll talk about that at the beginning. But leading up to that, I've been a little more oddly plugged into baseball this year than in years past. I've been following it a little bit closer. Been following the Reds. The Reds have been doing really well. They're kind of the team that I grew up following besides the Rangers. So, so good to see them doing well. And Joey Votto, rounding out his career, is one of my favorite players of all time. And it's kind of a Dirk situation where it's like, I kind of want to watch this guy while he's still playing, and appreciate what we've been able to witness the past decade or whatever. So got in a big baseball mood. And before I went out to the game, I went back this past week and started rewatching the Ken Burns baseball doc, Brian. Called Baseball.
Good stuff.
It's called Baseball. And I'm like part six right now, something like that. The stuff I watch is all the early days, baseball starting, and, obviously the big, there's like two episodes on Babe Ruth. There's like 4 hours of Babe Ruth stuff in it. Bunch of stuff on Ty Cobb, which is a wormhole I don't want to go down because it's pretty disturbing. And then let's just say if there's anyone that could play Ty Cobb, it's Tommy Lee Jones, and he did. And then, a lot of good nostalgic baseball talk and very Ken Burnsy. So if you're a big baseball fan, you've never done that deep dive, I would say it's the definitive historical record of baseball, with a lot of great footage and stuff. And you know, and then you go on the deep dive of, well, how do these players compare to players now? And that's a whole another wormhole you can go down. So it's fun. It's good. It's good. Really good. And then he did a follow up, I don't know, maybe eight years later, something like that, where he dives into like 90s baseball and you know, Ichiro and sort of the 2000s and stuff like that, and McGuire and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, check that out. Ken Burns Baseball. Excellent and worth your time.
That's a good rec. Little side rec. What's his name? Oh my gosh. Theo Epstein. Mm. Right?
Yes.
That name now is like, like you say it, you're like,
gonna haunt the Rangers.
I know.
Every team, basically.
Yeah. I mean, my whole deal with baseball is well on the record, but he was on Bill Simmons' podcast last week, and it was awesome. He's working for baseball. He's working for the commissioner as like a sort of, I don't know, a special consultant or whatever to the commission. I think Rob Manfred is a complete idiot. I think he needs
to be the commissioner. Theo, honestly.
Yeah, that's exactly my thought. I'm listening. He will be. Fantastic thoughts. Yeah, I hope so, because Rob Manfred sucks. I mean, I just think that guy's just a complete buffoon. But
yeah,
anyway,
he's botched everything.
You should check it out if you haven't. Listeners too, he had some really great thoughts. It just was refreshing to hear somebody like heavily involved with baseball talk about baseball in a way that I left saying, oh, so you kind of get it. Like, you understand what you're up against and why baseball is a tough sell for a lot of people and all this sort of stuff. It gave me some hope that I'll be able to get back into baseball at some point, because it was just a really good combo. And of course, like, Simmons tried to sabotage it multiple times, but
how many times did Simmons bring up the 0-3 Red Sox?
Like run. A billion. And I mean, some it's of
like,
it's
yeah,
relevant,
it's great what
right?
you did, because like, literally in the past 20 years, but yeah. Remember that Red Sox team?
Yeah, it was a lot. It was
hey,
a lot
I
of love, Sox.
Hey, man, I was a Sox, that 0-3 Red Sox team might be my favorite baseball team of all time.
Super
honestly.
Fun, man.
It is my favorite baseball team of all time.
Great time. It was a good time. But yes, you're not wrong. We always got to bring everything back to the Sox and the Celts.
the 86 Celts.
Doesn't matter what you're talking about. It's got to come back to the 86 Celts.
It's got to be 86. Limbias that's great. Died.
But yeah, definitely check out that interview with Theo, because he's, I don't know, it gave me some hope.
Yeah, so. I'm the same way. I feel like I've come back around. You know, I jokingly said I started liking baseball after the Astros thing, you know, like because of that. Like, that I'm in, you know.
Yeah, but you weren't an Astros fan before.
I don't want to talk all baseball, dude, cheating has been for 100 years. People have been cheating in baseball, like, honestly, you know, like, there's a certain part of me that's like, yeah, the guys should be able to use a little pine tar in their hand to throw the ball. I don't give a crap, you know, like.
No, you're getting into my steroid talk now. I'm not about steroids,
but like,
I'm with you.
I know,
no,
there's certain
I'm
things the you can do on the field that you can do to like gain an advantage where it's not like destroying the game, considering the game has been destroyed for 100 years, you know. I don't know. Yeah. What legacy are they talking about destroying? Like, that's destroying baseball. Right. It's like, dude, go back and look at baseball if you want to talk about that. It's probably more pure now than it's ever been. But yeah. All right. That's it for us. Mitchell's versus machines, 2 A+ and some fun recommends on the side there.
Richard just texted me and said F-. So that'll bring the average down a little bit. But
as soon as he saw it was animated, he gave it that.
Yeah. He's like, what? This is going to make me feel F. Yeah.
All right. There it is. If you want more from us, we are talking, what about Bob on an anniversary, a little Bill Murray talk, and maybe we'll get into some more baseball as well. And the VIP, and you get that Discord, you get that Falcon and Winter Soldier talk, Brian, on the Discord. I'll put a little teaser out this week on the main feed for that. But if you've seen all Falcon and Winter Soldier now, it's all wrapped up. Check that out, and we dive fully into that, an hour of that talk on the VIP feed for you. So check that out, madaboutmoviespodcast.com/VIP. Remember to tweet us, follow us, at madaboutmovies, follow Brian and I, at BGo12 and Kent Garrison on the socials as well. Thanks for listening. Subscribe, leave us 5 stars if you enjoy the pod and Make sure to tune in next week as we continue to dive into more 2021 movie talk here on the main feed and beyond, and hope to see you soon at the cinema. Goodbye.
Hey, baby, I hear the blues are calling, tossed salads and scrambled eggs. And maybe I seem a bit confused. Yeah, maybe, but I got you pegged. But I don't know what to do with those tossed salads and scrambled eggs. They're calling again. Scrambled eggs all over my face.
They're making me yah-yah. Tossed salads and scrambled eggs.
They're calling again.